Welcome to another edition of Birds of a Feather. This is your girl, AJ, the Suburban Princess. Here because I really felt the need to talk about what's going on in this weird in-between period of sports ever so gently landing back into a regular swing post-NBA All-Star game. The Flyers won last night. The Sixers won last night in overtime. And I'm not going to gripe too much about that. I just know from what I saw in the beginning and what I know of this team, I kind of wasn't shocked they won. I was more shocked that it ended up in overtime because I thought that they were going to have the fourth quarter comeback. But I forgot Ben wasn't playing, so the pace was very questionable a lot of the game. And I forgot the two newbies were in there and they had to get their reps to manage most of that game. And the few times that I did see Alec Burks in there, I thought I wanted to throw my phone through the TV when I saw him do that air ball at a very key point in the last part of the fourth quarter. And I instantly wanted to be like, okay, I heard this kid doesn't want to even be in Philly, so why is he even here? But over time, apparently, he ended up being one of those contributors besides Joel taking over, as Joel is known to do when Ben's not there. More on that crap too. In fact, I'm going to talk this whole podcast about what I'm starting to notice that happens in the off season of football, in between the beginning start of baseball, and in that mid kind of borderline prediction season of playoffs or not for the Sixers. There's an ugliness that comes out of the fan base because we're all restless and because we've all discovered Twitter. And because podcasts exist now, so some of us can vent, some of us can listen to us vent, or some of us can just totally disregard everything and just continue to draw a narrative of negativity known as Negadelphia when our Eagles aren't playing. There's just certain things I noticed about the end of that game. Obviously, the energy was not in this game at all last night for the most part. I got home late. But I ended up seeing the last half and I thought, well, they're known to kind of pick it up and figure it out by the second half. That I don't have a problem with. What I have a problem with is when it obviously starts off with the most questionable lineup and Coach Brown has still not figured out that there are other options than starting Neto or starting Furkan. Furkan was even shaky through this game up until the last quarter or so. He started getting his threes in, but it wasn't his usual... He wasn't in a zone, but it was because he was out of position. He wasn't even starting. Brett still has a problem identifying with who is the strength in the beginning and ending of games. And I don't know why is it every time they add somebody, it seems like it starts all over again. And you figure at this point, shouldn't everybody know where everybody belongs at this point? Still a big question. It wasn't exactly the stellar game, you know, coming off of the high of the NBA All-Star weekend looking grand and very Chicago and very controversial at times with the the slam dunk contest and the three-point shooting show that turned out to be such a shocker and a winner. But at the same time, it was just entertaining to watch that over watching the actual Sixers play, which I've never thought I'd ever admit to because the Sixers just are obviously disjointed this season. And I realized that part of the frustration that Joel obviously showed in the beginning of the season, it was obvious that even Joel was picking up vibes that this was not going to be an easy cohesion with Al Horford on the team, where it seemed like such a winning combination or an easy sub for Joel if when he started losing his legs. Now it seems like Joel's trying to fight against that narrative, and now Al seems like he's out of step. So, again, that wasn't consistent either. I mean, you know, you're hearing Shaq on NBA on TNT and Charles Barkley come at the Sixers as a whole, saying that the whole team is becoming very predictable and weak and, you know, so many words that Charles used in the past few months with the Sixers, obviously trying to mirror what Sixers fans are feeling, but don't want to really say. The true Sixers fans know that we obviously need a shooter. We need several shooters to cover up the sins of what Ben is refusing to do consistently and what Joel can only do but so much because his ultimate position is to be under the bucket. and playing in the paint. And I think the problem with Joel is sometimes I think he feels like he has to do everything. And I think for him trying to overcompensate for that, I think he shows a lot of his weaknesses. For one, he can't dribble and try to keep the ball away and concentrate on trying to figure out where the basket is, and trying to also at the same time look to see who he can lob to when there's no one nearby him. If Ben's not there creating space, Joel is pretty lost, and usually that's when he gets his turnovers. And I witnessed a couple of that happening last night, and it kind of is frustrating. But again, as many times as I really think about it and pull myself out of, you know, trying to be too much of a negative fan, I realize that there are just certain things that they just don't possess on this team that will never be there, no matter what. I don't care who's coaching. It's not something you can coach. There are just certain things that the Sixers are good at, and what's happening is everybody's roles is getting confused because Brett keeps changing it, the lineup, constantly as the games go on. And so the pace is never really solidified game by game. And that's why every game seems different, or at least every other couple games. And I think, you know, what Ernie and all them were saying last night on NBA and TNT, they were just basically saying, like, you know, you can't come back from a big gap and expect to be able to win every game. And you definitely can't come back in the playoffs when, you know, the teams that are better than you are turned up through the whole game. You know, it's going to be harder to come back from that deficit if you're down 30-something points by halftime, and then you think you have a shot by third or fourth quarter, and this team has already figured you out. And you, I mean, good or bad, quote-unquote, teams, Brooklyn could have won that game still. The fact that the Sixers had to fight their way back at home into overtime is saying something, but it's also showing that maybe they don't know how to really take advantage of the gifts that all of these players have and put it into one formula. And that is why they lose their step. It's not because all these other teams are better, but you get to a point where you have to stop living in this, we're better than that, we're better than that. Well, if you're better than that, it wouldn't be so hard to prove it. The problem is you guys don't know how to execute how much better you guys are. And that's the problem. And that's frustrating because some of those star players like Tobias, like Joel, like Ben can sometimes get lost in the sauce. And it happens so much that it makes people doubt, well, maybe they really aren't that good. Maybe they weren't worth their contract. I personally, you know, I've said it since the beginning of this podcast that I started when I decided to use this as my little vent space. I just don't believe that, you know, reporting player salaries, whether it be NFL or NBA, ever helps, you know, being a fan, because not only does it create a whole bunch of envy, but it also makes people use that as an excuse as if you're underachieving. When in actuality, running up and down that daggone court, you know, 82 times within 4 months, you know, and only have maybe 1 or 2 months to yourself where you're not doing anything sports related, and then go right back to the grind of practicing and getting yourself back in shape and losing weight or gaining weight or whatever you have to do to sustain your mobility. It's not easy. You know, that's why they're called professional, because that becomes their life blood is the game. Now, the problem is when you have to get over, you know, less than a month ago, losing Kobe Bryant and realizing he was the last great hungry star, you kind of get disillusioned to believe that, you know, these players are just going to be able to just pull it out of nowhere, and they can't. Some guys are just born with that kind of drive. Now, mind you, Devin Booker has become a name that's been thrown out there now as, you know, we need to get him off the Suns and get him on this team. And I've never even heard Devin Booker talked about hardly as much as he has been talked about this season. And I think it's obvious that he has either worked himself into a position on the Suns where people are starting to notice, or maybe because he's growing in his position and he's starting to stand out. I don't know what the difference is. Maybe his work ethic changed. I don't know. But either way, Devin Booker's being talked about for a reason. So that means that his grind must have changed and it is getting him a lot of notice. And I don't know if that means he's going to continue with the Suns or if he's going to end up on somebody else's team soon. But, you know, sometimes you just don't want to sleep on some of the guys that don't get as much fanfare as others. I mean, Bron is in his last stages of his game. Like, he's just playing it out to play. He doesn't have to work as hard, basically. But, you know, Bron is like the next Kobe in terms of, you know, legendary status in the game. But we all know that Bron is, you know, he has his moments where he sparks a lot of fire and he has a leadership quality. But I've just never honestly myself been a full fan of Bron in terms of thinking that he's, you know, the end all be all of basketball. I always really think that Kobe had that drive, but the problem was he was always a Laker and he was always so, what he seemed like, he seemed so perfect. So it was kind of hard to really relate to him, whereas Bron had his moments where you could tell he was wearing down, or he got emotional, or he said dumb things, and it kind of felt more human than whereas Kobe seemed like he was very calculated and clever in how he dealt with his image and all this stuff up until, obviously, the questionable things that he did off the court. But knowing now that he had retired in such a respectable way, and unfortunately knowing that he's no longer here, there's a high bar for these players now. And the reason why I think so many of us fans in Philly nitpick, it's because we really want that high bar to come here and stay here. And the problem is, if you have constant front office issues where players keep constantly get shuffled around team by team, or, you know, end up getting traded due to injury or whatever, it's kind of hard for the fans to stay positive. But there are times you just have to, I had to get off of Twitter a couple times today because I felt like now the new narrative is to diss Alshon Jeffrey. Mind you, I'm probably going to have to go back and see what happened around the time that whole Jacina thing blew up and created chaos in the locker room, quote unquote, when it really ended up just being Orlando Scandrick just running his mouth on First Take that really tried to fan the flames. And by that point, I don't even think really people cared. You know, I think it only came up again because it was public. Whereas before, you never heard Alshon even admit to even saying that he said anything. Now, granted, his relationship with Jocena is obviously one of familiarity, but I don't know if that was when he was a Bear or within the last year of this, you know, them winning the Super Bowl. I don't know. But it just seems like it's coincidental that everything starts to fan and starts to get really chatty around the time of a really bad season. And the Sixers, they haven't been doing horrible, but they should be doing better for a roster that seemed so dynamite in the offseason. And again, we're in another case of fans having to be patient and having to wait to see if they even sniff a playoff round. And right now, it doesn't seem like they can. And pardon me, because I did pull the little, our little fire alarm thing is starting to beep because we need a new battery. So forgive me if you hear that in the background, because I know it drives me crazy. But, you know, basically, I just wanted to, I guess, put out some caution with our fans, especially on Twitter and so and every social media. Don't be so quick to join on that whole narrative, because there are a lot of nervous, bored, hungry, attention-seeking bloggers slash analysts slash reporters who really want to drop seeds and be the first to report if Alshon is traded, or if Alshon leaves, or if Alshon is released, or if Alshon's contract is renegotiated. Whatever happens, it's one of these many mouths that are trying to be the first ones to say, we put it out there first back in February, this, that, and the third. And the next thing you know, if it does come true, come like, I don't know, May or post NFL draft, then okay, they can be credited. But I just refuse to believe everything because it's negative. And it's very easy for all of us, especially fans who don't know anything, to be hushed into a corner to believe that everything happened for a reason. I really honestly think all that came out was because it probably wasn't just Alshon that felt that way about Wentz at times, if he in fact was the one who mouthed off. Obviously, it came from multiple sources, and I think multiple players probably said stuff. And I think it's mostly the players who probably aren't there anymore. And I think that created a whole buzz at the fact that there was even somebody dare saying anything against Carson publicly, to the point where they're that annoyed that they let somebody know about it. And to that I say, you have to watch people's agendas. Because obviously Scandrick's agenda was to get under Malcolm's skin, because for some reason he felt the need to mention Malcolm more than any player on the team that he had a problem with. And he was the first one to be put out there, even by Eagles social media, that he was kissing Malcolm's ass at one point on the sidelines. So if you really don't like somebody, it kind of has its way of showing itself out there in public that you obviously didn't like him. And you wonder now whose angle is coming at Alshon to say, I smell a rat with him, you know? And if that's the case, that would come out factual by now. And I really think at this point, everyone's just holding on to speculation because it hasn't been proved against, but it hasn't been said definitely either. So we're just riding with whatever story comes out right now, because there's this whole football dead period where, you know, everyone just starts throwing crap out just to get some ripples. There's a lot of people who have podcast shows now. There's a lot of people who are younger and they just believe that gossip comes from somewhere. And it's true. When I first heard it, I instantly thought Nelly, because I felt Nelson was getting the most criticism on the team and he was the one having the most pressure. So I figured naturally it has to be Nelly. But then it sounded also like someone was bold enough to really get detailed about things. And I'm thinking this has to be someone who was never on the team that long, because they just instantly found something to talk crap about. And that's never been the chemistry of the Eagles for a long time, even since Andy Reid. Whether you're frustrated or not, a lot of the players just knew not to even put that out there because they don't want to have to answer to it. So I just feel like if someone was dumb, that dumb, to really just make Josina want to perk her ears up and say, we got to mention this because this is happening too much, you know, around this time. I just think it's easy to go with the negative when your team hasn't won anything in a couple years, which is so spoiled because we just won a Super Bowl. The team just won a Super Bowl in 2017. So I really think it's stupid to act like, once again, we're going back to that Negadelphia mentality that we had before they finally got a chip. And now that they got one, now it's not good enough, because now the Sixers are having the same turmoil. And now everybody wants to point fingers as to why Al Horford's there. Well, everybody wanted him. He was available. Everybody wanted him. Now they can't stand the fact that he's quote unquote stuck with us for 5 years, and they already see him declining. And what I think is so funny is, it's funny he came from the Celtics, because as soon as that deal was done, I kind of looked at it like, I feel like that's a cowboy type deal where they're going to find anything and everything to get rid of him and realize they got to eat a chunk of money later, like they did with what's his name from Dallas, and that running back that came that ended up not doing anything for us. Same thing, you know, every time I think about him being on the team, I thought everybody was, a lot of people were so hype about him coming. And I just thought, oh, this smells disaster. So to know that at one point, even people were trying to talk about, you know, bringing on that wide receiver that will come to me, of course, because now my sleepy brain has lost it. But as soon as we get him, how do we know that he's not going to decide to pull up on Carson when he doesn't like the way the ball is thrown? Like, there's just no, you have to realize how people move. And it's just, it gotten to the point where it's so predictable for Philly fans to believe that somebody from the opposite rival is really going to do better here. Same reason why people believe if you trade somebody who's not doing good here, we'll get some value for us outside. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, that's my rant for now. I'm probably going to have a part two to this, but if you were listening to Birds of a Feather, I appreciate you. And if not, holler at Girly Virgo 78. Take care. I'll be back with a part two. Thanks for listening.